Rewind is a production of Wisconsin Eye. To keep programs like this free and accessible to all, please consider a charitable gift to wiseye.org/donate or text WISEYE to 44321.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. A new tally of the cost of this spring's Supreme Court election puts the price tag at a record doubling $115 million. And mid-year campaign finance reports raise questions about Governor Tony Evers' intentions. Will he run again? Plus, Justice Rebecca Bradley has so far raised no money for a re-election campaign, spurring speculation that the battle could be on for an open seat. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for July 18th.
I'm Anya Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. It's been a week of speculation here in Wisconsin, especially around the big question, will he or won't he? Will Evers run for a third term? We got a whole lot of campaign finance data this week and a little bit of surprising news, which was that Evers has raised much less money this time of year than this time of year 4 years ago. And so that's really raised speculation of what are his intentions. To date, we have some numbers on the screen. He's raised just over $750,000 with $2.1 million cash on hand compared to about five times that this time 4 years ago, $5 million raised, $7.3 million cash on hand. What are you hearing?
So there are signs in this report that are not going to tamp down speculation that Evers is going to run again, obviously. But we kind of saw before he was backing off the pace he had set in 4 years ago. Look, it was obvious 4 years ago he's going to run again. And if you look at the report that he filed then, he had $1 million from the Democratic Party of Wisconsin transferred over. He had max donations from individual donors. He had the Democratic Governors Association giving him money. We don't see that in this report. There isn't any transfer from the state party. There aren't any max donations from individuals. There's not any DGA money. On the one hand, you can argue the focus this spring was on the Supreme Court. It was the most expensive race in national history. All right, $115 million, we'll talk about that later on. That's where the money was going. But if you're Evers, if you're asking, are you going to run, this is not going to push back on that. The flip side is, the governor, because of state campaign finance laws, can turn the machine on at any time. Remember, parties can take unlimited contributions and make unlimited transfers. So if he says tomorrow, I'm going to go, the party can get a bunch of big donations, transfer money over, and his machine is primed. Same time. Look, it's been the same story for a year. People will tell you that he likes a job. If his health is good, his wife's health is good, and the attraction of a democratically controlled Senate or Assembly or both would make him want to run. He'll get pressure nationally to run because he's a sure candidate. Now that he'd win for sure, he's raised money, he's got name ID. The pushback has always been, but he'd be 79, end of the third term. And as we've got through this process, he's been so nonchalant about what he wants to do that people kind of feel like, this is feeling like he's not going to run. Now, as of taping, as we sit here right now, I was told no decision's been made. He's not calling other candidates, or his team isn't, to say, I'm not going to run. And there's not an imminent announcement. But get past imminent. There's probably going to be something soon. One thing to keep on the calendar is, I think July 31st or August 1st, the DGA starts to meet. It's a natural thing to want to have that done before then. So we might get something this weekend. It could be early next week. It could be a week and a half. But by the end of July, you'll probably get an answer. And, people are really split. I don't know about yours, but people are really split. And I've picked up more chatter of, I don't think he's going to do it, than I felt 6 months ago. At the same time, I'm still getting emails every day of from his campaign asking for money. Like, I'm on the distribution list. Hey, this has had the Supreme Court. Fight back against Donald Trump. But again, it just feels like we're right in the middle and maybe it's tilting toward he's not going to run. But I would never predict that because ultimately it's his call. And in the end, there'll be three people in that room when he makes a decision. People tell me, the governor, his wife, and Maggie Gow, chief of staff. There might be others, but unless you've talked to one of those three, I don't trust anything I'm getting until I know from one of those three what he's saying he's going to do.
And we're going to talk a little bit about potential other Democratic mm-hmm. contenders in a moment, because when, to your point, you know, if he says yes, that spigot turns on immediately. If he doesn't, there is a bunch of people who would then will be kind of like fighting for that Democratic money machine. And we're seeing a kind of similar dynamic play out on the Republican side, where there are currently two contenders setting up potentially a primary. We got numbers from them this week as well. We'll pull up that information. So Bill Berrien, who just joined the fight sort of last week, his PAC raised $1.2 million, most of that coming from the Winklevoss twins. People might remember them best from being portrayed in The Social Network. They're cryptocurrency billionaires. And so that sets him up with almost $1 million in the bank. And then Josh Schoeman, who's been in the race for a little bit longer, trailing quite a bit behind, $500,000 raised, a little under actually, $338,000 in the bank. And so setting up a potential primary win, but also kind of showing really the difference between those two candidates, one who's got those kind of national connections. Bill Berrien comes from a sort of more elite East Coast family. Josh Schoeman comes from a multi-generational Wisconsin family and is much more, he's a county executive. And so we'll see kind of different dynamics play out in that race.
So to Berrien, you know, I think I said last week, he said he raised $1.2 million to the PAC. Well, how did he raise it? Was it 10 people giving 120 grand or 100 giving 12? Well, we found out it's two giving 500,000 bucks a piece and a third giving $100,000. So you can't do that for your campaign for governor, right? Like you actually launch the campaign itself. Max donation is $20,000. But to his credit, he has the connections to get that kind of money from donors, so that could bode well for him down the line. Also, by doing a $400,000 TV buy, which kind of odd timing. It's July of an off year, but he has to take control of the narrative because wasn't a great rollout last week, got panned by talk radio. People tell me this is a feel of him trying to introduce himself to primary voters, and his campaign will likely do a poll after, a poll before and poll after, and see his numbers move. If they move, they can go pitch to donors of, hey, we've got a path. For Schoeman, you know, what's your gauge of what's a fair comparison? Rebecca Clayfish in 2021 raised $1.2 million the first week or so of her campaign. But she had been lieutenant governor. She had been through a recall with Scott Walker. She had a unique profile as a lieutenant governor because of those experiences. So maybe not a fair comparison, but for Schoeman, there's already fighting that perception of, can he raise enough money to hang with the big dogs? And this, oh, and then there's Tom Tiffany. $85,000 for his congressional campaign. Look, you can't just transfer congressional money to state money account wholesale. You can make a small donation, I believe. But once Evers makes his decision, all these other pieces will fall into place. If Evers decides, then you'll see Tiffany decide, just on the GOP side. Then Eric Hovde, I mean, Mary Felskowski, Pat Tesh, go on the line. You'll start seeing pieces fall into place on that side. For the Democrats, once he decides, either they'll get really excited about getting going, or they're going to go, okay, I'm going for election in my own office.
Yeah, and so we have, you know, some of the likely Democratic contenders. We also got some of their campaign finance reports this week, and none of them sort of raised the amount of money for a very serious, very competitive race out the gate. Josh Call raised $144,000. Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez, $45,000. Secretary of State Sarah Godlewski, $37,000. Milwaukee City Executive, County Executive David Crowley, $71,000. Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson, $69,000. So those are not the types of numbers for people who are ready to mount a very serious campaign tomorrow for governor, because they are, of course, waiting for what Evers does.
You also can't, though, go say, hey, you should give to me because I run for governor. That's kind of like not how it's done this business. You get a little bit in trouble with the big guy if you do something like that. Now, a good person was Call, all right, 4 years ago, he raised about three times as much in this period. It was clear what was going to happen, though, right? Call's going to run for attorney general again, Evers for governor. People also told me that, look, some of these numbers, I've seen, and I looked at fundraising for lawmakers as well, a lot of people down from before. Oh, we just had this massive Supreme Court race that sucked up all the oxygen for a while financially from donors. So that might have a reason that you're seeing these numbers not so great. My question becomes these five and others, because there's no limit on who could run for governor, right? If the governor says no, how quickly can these guys get a campaign up and going and raise big money? Because it's going to be a sprint a year-long sprint from now until August of next year when the primary is going to be.
And we got another kind of interesting tea leaf out of the campaign finance reports this week, another kind of will they, won't they. Justice Rebecca Bradley, mm-hmm. it turned out, has raised no money for her reelection campaign, $0 for a reelection campaign, which, you know, everyone I've spoken to says if you're raising no money, that means you're not running. You reported right after the April election that she said she was going to figure out a path to sort of stop the liberal tilt of the court, which was taken as something like a pre-announcement, mm-hmm. but she has not actually made any kind of formal announcement. And so if she does not end up running, and again, she did not respond to my calls mm-hmm. kind of questioning this, that sets up a run for a vacant seat rather than a re-election campaign for an incumbent on the Supreme Court.
So she told me in April, I'm going to run for election. About a month later, I mentioned the show that I started picking up some chatter of like, well, maybe there's a reason not to. And then a few weeks ago, I reported that there was kind of a negative vibe coming out of her camp where people had talked to her of this seems like an unlikely path to victory. And so look, the last two Supreme Court races, we had both conservatives lose by 10 points. One fully embraced Donald Trump and Brad Schimmel. One, Daniel Kelly, kind of ran a little bit arm's length. There are different dynamics. You know, 23 is a referendum on abortion and redistricting. This one seemed like a referendum on Elon Musk, in some ways, and Donald Trump. But the result was the same. So if Bradley has a path, people tell me, to win, then she will run. If victory is losing by 5 points and not 10, there's not really a point for her to run. Now, at the same time she may be having doubts, it's also true that, again, I hate bringing up the $115 million, but that's a ton of money. It's a tough time right now to go ask conservative donors, hey, I need you to give money to my campaign after you just maxed out to Schimmel and maybe other groups, even though we've lost 2 by 10 points, even though I haven't officially decided what I'm going to do or announced. So there's still time. There's a path. But the longer she waits, the harder it is both for her and for a potential replacement candidate to get up and running, especially with Chris Taylor raising good money.
And, you know, and the dynamics of this race are a little bit different, where in the past, both liberals and conservatives were fighting for the ideological majority on the court. This time around, liberals are fighting for a less flippable 5-2 mm-hmm. majority. And so maybe that also, again, speaks to donors a little bit differently. You know, is that going to rev up that money machine quite as much as saying, you know, this is the heart of the court is at stake. So we will see in the coming weeks. People I've spoken to have also said, basically, she needs to make a decision by Labor Day in order for any conservative candidate to have a shot. And speaking of Supreme Court races, you did some reporting, you did your final tally of spending, and we've been saying for months that the April election cost over $100 billion, is sort of the general takeaway, and you have found $115 million total.
So like, is that 109 back in early April? So I hate to diminish $6 million. It's not a huge difference, but it puts in perspective the final numbers on this, and here's the thing. This is what I can track. I can't track issue ads like in the mail. We subscribe to Ad Impact, which is a service that tracks TV buys, media buys. I can get like when the Wisconsin Manufacturers of Commerce Issues Mobilization Council does a TV buy, I get information about that. They don't report that to the state, okay? I get numbers from that. So you mix that with reports to the state from expenditures and the candidates, that's how I get my number. What's interesting about these numbers are that Susan Crawford spent $33 million in change. Okay, that is an eye-popping number for a candidate for Supreme Court. She outspent Brad Schimmel more than 2-1. Elon Musk, meanwhile, put about $25 million in. Now I say about because there's about 21, 22 I can track through his various groups. There's $3 million he gave the state GOP. What I can't track is this petition effort that he had, where if you signed a petition, you're supposed to get $100 for opposing activist judges. And he says he gave out three $1 million awards to three people to be spokespeople for the government. Now, I say he said that because I don't have a report saying black and white he spent that much money. They said they got a check, and I have to trust them in that.
Well, so, and we've heard anecdotally that some of the petition signers did not receive checks. And so, they're just it's been a pretty untrackable and unique and unprecedented process.
So let's focus on what we do know. What we do know is that Susan Crawford put a lot of her money into TV, I think around $25 million. And that's important because candidates get a better rate on broadcast TV than outside groups do. Now, digital is different, that kind of thing. But on broadcast, Crawford was outspent by all these groups combined, but she got better rates, ergo she got more ads where she was either at parity or ahead in the closing weeks of the race. That is important. That means you're getting more messages into homes on a daily basis. So kudos to the Liberals. They figured out how to run this thing. We were supposed to report from the state GOP sometime in the coming weeks about what went wrong in the spring. We know part of what went wrong, and they know part of what went wrong. One, Elon Musk thing, the candidate thing, they also have the money thing. Republicans are intent on, they have each of these groups that does ads. Those guys don't like to share or give control of the state party. You could also argue the state GOP hasn't earned the trust because of their struggle with raising money. But if you give your money to the party, then it goes to the candidate, it helps. Susan Crawford got more from the state Democratic Party than Brad Schimmel got from the GOP. Now, the GOP still gave $9+ million, nothing to sniff at. But my point again is Liberals spend their money more wisely, more efficiently. That helped them a great deal in the way this went, because they got outspent actually overall, and there's about $3 or $4 million.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the sort of exact breakdown, and it's $59 million for Schimmel, $56 million for Crawford. So in some ways, that looks, you know, quite even. And then those dynamics at play of how the money gets spent can like really, really shift how efficient candidates use their money. And so that's interesting, and it will be interesting to see in that report, you know, to what extent Republicans and conservatives kind of catch up to playing that game, so to speak. Okay, so we spoke last week about this congressional redistricting challenge, and now that challenge is being challenged. So members of the House, the GOP members of the House, attorneys for them, we spoke about this last week. So there's a 2011 law that basically says if there's a challenge to congressional maps, then the Supreme Court has to select a circuit court panel, and they are pushing back on that process. It's a never used little law. So talk us through a little bit what that says and then what their argument is.
Okay, so again, the petition says is the map is an uncompetitive gerrymander, that these seats are so safe for incumbents, there's almost no point running against them. They're never going to lose, except for like one over in western Wisconsin, the third. They want to use this 2011 law, which Republicans wrote while they were in charge of both houses in the governor's office and had a majority in the Supreme Court, that said if you have a challenge to a legislative or congressional district, you must petition a court, which then has to tell the Supreme Court, which then must appoint a three-judge panel to hear the case. The only way to appeal that is to the Supreme Court, which has final say over that challenge. There was a petition started back in 2011. It didn't go through the entire process because there was like competing lawsuits with the maps in 2011. The Republican attorneys now are saying, look, we have an issue here we want you to basically figure out first. Number one, this is not a typical challenge because we've already got a map put in place by the court. Because of that, you should actually have a petition for original action, which was rejected a couple weeks ago, or a petition for reconsideration. Basically, you guys should reconsider the case you handed out in 2022. That's the appropriate path because this is asking an inferior tribunal, to use the words of the letter, to overrule the Supreme Court. It's a problem. I'm not sure how it's going to go. Never been used process. But what it does do, though, is potentially delay this process. Why is that important? 2026 seems like a long way away, but the Elections Commission will tell you they must have maps in place in March to effectively administer an election. I know it's still July, but you've followed courts before. They don't really act expeditiously sometimes. They take their time, especially when there's an appeal. So you can game out your head, circuit court panel to Supreme Court. It could take well past March if there is, especially, a challenge briefed by both sides and considered by the Supreme Court this entire process.
So we will definitely see how that plays out because also those districts, two Wisconsin districts, are kind of key to Democrats' chances of trying to take back the House. And so this is going to be pretty hard fought. We also saw this week Seventh Circuit pre-nominees. So our two senators, who don't often get along, kind of came together along with this commission to put forward a couple of options of Wisconsin jurists for the Seventh Circuit Court. That's to replace outgoing Judge Diane Sykes. So those lawyers and judges are Joe Bugney, Cynthia Davis, Thomas Ruse, Kevin Martins, and Rebecca Tableson. But you've been reporting, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel has been reporting, that Trump and his team have been interviewing Wisconsin jurists on their own for that same position. What are you hearing?
So the nominee commission was created to create consensus candidates. It's three appointees from both each senator. When you have a Democrat and Republican, they often struggle to find compromise. You must get five of the six to sign off on an applicant to then advance to the recommendation stage. The Trump White House is not looking for a consensus candidate. They want to have a MAGA type Supreme Court, or sorry, appeals court appointee, right? I reported back in May that the court, or the White House, had begun a parallel process to what the commission was doing, started interviewing people. Journal Sentinel advanced that story this week, had some more names of who was, some of those names, but more names who had applied for the job, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is, will the White House pick one of these five, or will the president go, you know, I'm going to pick who I want. It's my power. It's also interesting is, way back when, senators had basically veto authority over any nominee from their state. That still exists for a lower level judge, but the appellate level doesn't exist anymore. So even if Tammy Baldwin objects to this person, whoever that Trump picks can maybe get to the Republican-controlled U.S. Senate, you know, in the Seventh Circuit. Remember, Sykes is going to retire, go to senior status in October. So you kind of want somebody in place in the next appoint in the next couple of weeks to kind of speed the process along, get there by October 1st.
Yeah, so we actually have a couple of deadlines that we're going to be paying attention to over the next couple of weeks. All right, and then our final story for today. We spoke last week about this kind of scathing report out of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. What we were talking about was technically a draft of that, and so they actually brought it up before the commission earlier today. They voted 5-1 to adopt the findings of the report. And just a reminder, this is kind of an investigation into a Madison clerk who lost 193 ballots in the November election. The commission found that she broke the law, but were not advising criminal charges. They wanted to advise basically changes to the process. So we have a little bit of video from today's proceedings.
It was our conclusion that these bags, we don't think they ever made it to the poll site. And that's why they weren't counted. They were either in the Ellis Island building or in the clerk's office somehow. The lack of curiosity, the testimony that you know, oh, there might have been ballots there, but I didn't ask for a full month, was not plausible. Or if that was the truth, it was a rather shocking dereliction of just ordinary responsibility. It is not a recommendation of Commissioner Millis or myself that any criminal matters be addressed or that the commission make any criminal referrals. This is about fixing what went wrong and making sure it doesn't happen in the future.
Right. So no criminal recommendations, but recommendations for changes to election administration procedure in the city of Madison.
And the commission deadlocked 3-3, and kind of the next piece was like how to move forward. They're giving the city, I think, until like August to come back with like how it's doing with these things, for they proceed even further on this case.
Yeah, so I think this will also kind of extend for at least another couple of months. That brings us to the stock report. And of course, we're very focused on campaign finance this week. So rising, we have Chris Taylor.
So we talked about Rebecca Bradley and what she didn't do. Chris Taylor raised like $585,000, a record amount for a July campaign period ahead of a spring race. So a couple things to think about here. One, seeing a pattern emerge where you see liberal candidates for Supreme Court have not just big donors from Wisconsin, but a small dollar network that is national. Going through Taylor's report, dork that I am, my spreadsheets, I saw big name Democratic donors on a report, but also saw lots of money from outside Wisconsin. That is your email list. There's some carryover for her from other campaigns, Crawford's Prosewiches, which helps you because there's some continuity. You know that list is where to go. But kudos to Taylor for raising that money. Now, the question is this low-hanging fruit, or is this the first part of like a bigger push financially? As you mentioned, it's about going from 4-3 to 5-2, best-case scenario for liberals. They also have a second kick at that cat in 2027 because Annette Ziegler is up then. So this is, I don't want to say a throwaway race, but it's not like life or death for liberals to keep the court or expand the majority. So will donors get involved? Will they get kicked up? On the conservative side, if Bradley doesn't run, well, is it Marie Lazar, the Second Circuit in Waukesha? Shelley Grogan's in the Second Circuit? I mean, Lazar's been mentioned often as a potential candidate for Supreme Court, but you've got to get up and running, so there's that piece. And the only thing I want to mention, and I didn't notice myself when I first read the decision in Eversby Markline last week, the whole thing about oversight by the Joint Ministry of Rules, there's a line from Bradley in there about how some of us have not yet left the fight, have not given up the fight. Mm-hmm. And in talking to some lawyers, it's like, was she sending a signal that she's still engaged here? Or is that like some just hyperbole in the way out the door? I don't know what it means. But what I can tell you is Chris Taylor's in awfully good shape financially. if anybody else kind of left of center was looking at running in this seat, you're going to go, she's too far ahead, I can't catch her. So forget about it. And then two, if you're conservative and you're not Bradley, do you go, this is a little bit too much? You know, how do you catch it? If let's just game it out. Bradley says in August, I'm not going to run. I'm not predicting that, but just shows. How do you raise that much money when Taylor's still pulling money in every day from now until August? How do you catch up? Especially with a spirited conservative donor base going, hey, we've lost two in a row. Don't want to do this again. Oh, there's a governor's race in November that I'm really concerned about. Races for Congress. It could be a tough sell financially for conservatives.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye on that. Mixed this week, Congressman Derek Van Orden.
So more finance reports. Rebecca Cook is a Democrat running to challenge Van Orden, lost by 3 points roughly in 2024. She raised more than $980,000. Pretty good clip. Van Orden raised $1.2 million. Pretty good. You dive down the numbers, though, you see more than half of his money came from committees. Now, it all spends the same, right? So in my experience, it doesn't matter where it comes from. It's all about how you spend it. So I'm not concerned about that unless the leadership and those PACs decide that this is not a good race to invest in. As long as they're committed to Derek Van Orden, he's fine. But you look at Cook's report, she raised everything but 50 grand from individuals. That is a heck of a network for a non-incumbent running for office. Now, don't forget, yes, she waits tables. Yes, she leads a nonprofit, but she also used to be a fundraiser for Democrats. So she's got that experience. Let's not diminish that whatsoever, but she's done a good job raising money. She also has competition. We saw two Democrats who've said they're going to run. They're not raising a whole lot. I mean, I hate to diminish, one had 150 grand, but that's like not much for a congressional race these days. So let's put that aside. So Cook is getting all the national folks kind of rallying around her. Van Orden, look, you know, I don't predict anything about next November. It's still a little murky. I saw some polls this week that show Democrats are behind where they were in 2018, which was kind of a wave-ish year for them. They aren't doing as well. Part of that's because their base is still pretty dispirited after last fall. They want to fight back more. Speaking of fighting, more DVO, Mark Pocan drama. There's a video of an exchange.
I'm used to them fighting over Twitter, not necessarily in person.
Mark Pocan was doing an interview with Spectrum TV alongside Tony Weed, congressman from up in the Green Bay area. DVO rides up his motorcycle, guns it a few times, drowns him out. Little snide comment from Pocan, they go back and forth. Like, he's not trying to win friends, all right? This is who Derek Van Orden is. The question is that attractive to people? Yes, for the Trump crowd, it works. Be less of a Trump crowd next fall, we think. You know, how's the Epstein thing play out? Are people happy with the economy next year? All kinds of factors will impact that. But if it's a less Trumpy crowd, more like nice Wisconsin nice crowd, that might not play next fall, but we'll see.
And also whether that, you know, revs up Democratic voters sort of in response. And then falling, we have Randy Bryce. It was announced this week that he was outraised 45-1.
Look, this guy was a money-making machine back in 2018. He raised $8.5 million the cycle. But back then, he was trying to take out Paul Ryan, the House Speaker at the time. He was his cause a celeb where he was fundraising with Hollywood stars and he was traveling around, had this viral rollout video. We've seen none of that so far. It's been very quiet, raised less than $50,000, which, again, I hate to diminish $50,000, but that's nothing in a congressional campaign, especially over a six-week period. It shows you like the hook, the appeal that he had maybe has faded somewhat. It's also bringing up this question of, will somebody else run instead of Randy Bryce and try and be the standard bearer? We'll see. There's time. But Brian Stile raised $1.1 million this quarter, had like $3.7 million in the bank. Whoever runs would be a tough task to beat Brian Stile because he's a great fundraiser, a lot of money in the bank, and he outperforms a ticket almost every election. Barring that lawsuit we talked about, changing the maps, Stile's in pretty good shape right now.
Yeah, so lots to look out for. And then, you know, November's a ways away, but also it's kind of around the corner. So we'll kind of see. That'll do it for us. I am Aniven Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.